Can you say this morning that you're bound for the promised land? You just look at the anticipation of the people of God as they came out of Egypt, being free, going to a land that flowed with milk and honey, all the provisions that they need in life. And spiritually speaking, we look for heaven, the promised land of God, where all of our needs will be fulfilled, where there never be any sorrow or disappointment. A continuous day of grandeur and bliss and joy. And that's the hope of the Christian. And when we sing the invitation song in a few minutes, if you're not a child of God by redemption, if you're unsaved, alienated from Jehovah, we'd like to see you come and be baptized into Jesus Christ for the remission of your sins. Leave this building headed for the promised land. If you are a child of God and been unfaithful, you need to confess those wrongs and ask God to pardon and forgive. And the blood of Christ will cleanse from all iniquity. If we repent of our sins, confess our wrongs, God will abundantly pardon. I'm talking to you this morning on the problem of extremism, or the threat of it. And I've got some diagrams here that I made that I hope will illustrate what I'm talking about. The Church of Jesus Christ has been plagued with extremism through the ages. And we see this problem among us today. We need to walk down the middle of the road. And by that I mean walk in truth. And not veer to the left or to the right. Now I've seen that brethren talking about if you drive in the middle of the road, that'll get you in trouble. I'm not talking about compromising the truth. I'm talking about staying in that which is revealed. Not being liberal on one hand or a hobbyist and a radical on the other. And Brother Mike will turn the overhead projector on. I think we can see what we're talking about by an everyday illustration. I'll use Smith for the farmer's name, Farmer Smith. And Farmer Smith, he is an astute farmer. And he's got a cow that he wants staked out. We used to do that where I grew up. He'd stake the cow out every day. And so he tells his son, John, he said, John, I want you to put old Bossy out. And I want you to take this, want you to take 100 foot of rope and you stake her out here in the field over there so she can graze. She can get out the kind of grass that I want her to have. I don't want her over in the ragweeds. And so John, he takes the cow, and instead of 100-foot rope, he gets 125 because he looks over beyond that 100-foot radius and he sees some things that he believes that the cow needs. And so he stakes her out 125 feet. And then he's got a son named Bill, and the next day, John, you know, didn't do too good a job. He says, Bill, I want you to stake the cow out 100 feet from the stake. Well, Bill, he goes there. He takes the rope and he says, well, he says, Dad set the stake around 100 feet. That'd be 50 feet this way and 50 feet that way. That'd be 100 feet. And so he has 50 feet. He just doubles up the rope and puts her 50 feet. Well, he didn't do what his dad told him to do. So the next day, he tells Joe, says, Joe, I want my cow staked out 100 feet. Said these other boys didn't do what I told them. And so he takes the 100-foot rope and does precisely what his father instructed him to do. Which one obeyed his dad? Now, put on number two, if you would, Mike, and we'll see how this applies spiritually or religiously. We got some brethren, you know. The Father has told us how we're to live. He's given us divine authority. Philippians 3, we talked about this the other day. Walk by the same rule. Use the same standard. The same rope, if you would. And Colossians 3:17, whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of Jesus Christ. Do it by his authority. If any man speak, let him speak as the oracles of God. But some brethren come along today and they think that's too restrictive. And so we have the liberal rope. And the liberals, they allow what the New Testament does not authorize. And they got their rope beyond what God has said. Well, here's some other brethren. They've got the radical rope. They forbid some things that the New Testament authorizes. But there are others who use the truth rope, and they just practice what God says, what God permits, what God authorizes, whether it be general authority or specific authority. Now raise the question, brethren, which group is doing what God said? Well, you know, we don't have any problem with Farmer Smith. We can see that his sons, two of them, disobeyed him. But sometimes I wonder why. Some of us can't see why God is being disobeyed today by going beyond what he's authorized or coming short of it. Now, the next one, if you would, Mike, and we'll hurriedly make some application. Here's the liberal rope, going beyond what God has spoken. And we see brethren trying to raise money through raffles and sales and business enterprises. Well, the church isn't to be in business. It's not to have bake sales. It's not to raise money any other way, brethren, than the Bible authorizes. And then we see acceptance of unscriptural marriages. One preacher said, well, we don't pay any attention to their divorce and remarriage. We tell them we care. And the church is just being filled up all across this country with unscriptural marriages. Well, then you also have the social gospel. And then there's a fellowshipping false brethren. And not only that, but weekday observance of the Lord's Supper, Saturday observance, and church working through societies and instrumental music and women preachers. This is the liberal rope. It's gone beyond what God has authorized. But here's also the radical rope. And one's just as bad as the other. And the radical rope, well, these brethren say that you can only have one Bible class at a time. Everybody has to meet in the auditorium. And that position never did make much sense to me. Try to feed the youngsters the same way you feed the adults. We don't use that kind of logic, brethren, at the dinner table. If we use that, you'd be feeding little Junior, about 6 months old, beefsteak. Choke him to death. And we know we wouldn't allow that at the public school system. And we'd go over there and we'd raise the roof. What are you trying to do teaching all these children from the first through the eighth grade? I went to school the first time I went. We had all of them in one big room. But she didn't try to teach us all on the same level. She taught the first grade, then, or maybe through in the second. Then she moved over to this one and on over. And she'd teach all through those rows. And then she'd start back. She'd give us some homework. And while she was teaching others, and we did fairly well. But she knew she couldn't teach the first graders on the eighth grade level. And yet that's what these brethren are advocating. And then they say they can't have any women teachers. So they got men back in the classrooms teaching. If they allow classes, they got the men back there teaching little children. Now men probably can teach little children, no problem, no nothing unscriptural about it. I doubt if they can do the job the women can. And the women can't even teach women back in a Bible class. Then you have mutual ministry, you know, everybody must speak some, and no located preacher. And then you can't have a treasury and one container, one cup, they call it. I believe in the one cup. I just don't I think the one container is too expedient, and on and on. Now, brethren, if this brother here or these brethren forbid what God authorizes, what's the difference in them than the brethren who go out here and allow women preachers and instrumental music and these other things? Is there any difference? I'm talking about banning it and making a law. And they're not tolerant where they'll accept us who don't agree with them. If they want one container for themselves and they accept us because we use many containers, I don't have any problem with that. If they don't bind it and make it a law. Because they can still do what God says with one container, and we can do what God says with many containers. You know, these things have gotten us into trouble. I'm talking about extremism. We see it on both sides. But I tell you, what's killed us, brethren, and hurt us, our brethren forbidding preachers saying that you can't do some of these things that God has authorized. And here's the truth rope, and we go just as far as God would allow, no farther. And the individual containers, located preachers, Bible classes, women teachers of women and children, a literature, and on, whatever the Lord permits. But I want to zero in for a few minutes this morning on the radical side, forbidding what God has authorized, and becoming factious about it in the church, and creating their own groups. And I've never seen in the years I preached, and it's been 30-some years, I've never seen in the last few years of such extreme positions that brethren are espousing. And I believe, brethren, that we've inherited every crank in the brotherhood. They don't want to go out here with the liberals, and so they move in with us and cause a lot of trouble. And I tell you, if they start pressing these things and imposing upon us, we need to deal with them just like we do liberal brethren. Well, in 1 Corinthians 11, verse 19, "For there must be also heresies among you." You have this word heresy in Galatians 5. In Titus 3:10, a heretic, after the first and second admonition, refused. And a heretic is one who imposes his own views and ideas on others. It's not talking about tenets of doctrine here that the Bible speaks about. That is, this person is not one who perverts tenets of doctrine. George Campbell made that observation. He's talking about opinions. Personal views that one has. Now, this word for heresies in the New American Standard Bible is factions. And Weymouth, a translation, 1 Corinthians 11, 19, says differences of opinion. Williams, parties. Pulpit Commentary says a school of thought or a set of opinions. George Swan stated taking sides. And W.E. Vine, in Vine's Word Study, Vine said, an opinion, especially a self-willed opinion. Now listen to it. Who is a factious man? Who's a heretic? who promotes heresies. Here's a man who has an opinion, especially a self-willed opinion, which is substituted for submission to the power of truth and leads to division and the formation of sects. And so brethren will divide the church over their own opinions, and they move out, divide and separate, create a party, go down the street somewhere with a little group, and they say, we're sound in the faith, and then they try to get a preacher, and they send letters out all over the country wanting to raise support for the preacher. And they weaken both sides, you see. And I want to tell you, brethren, if they'd stayed together and learned some tolerance and worked things out and be patient about some things, they'd had the group as one with their preacher and some resources and energies to promote the cause of Christ. We've got some serious problems among us. Turn that off now, Brother Mike, if you would. We're allowing personal differences to create factions, heresies among us, in the congregation. How many containers for the Lord's Supper? Shall we break the bread before distribution? Well, I break my bread for myself. You do too. Man who stands up here can't break the bread for me, nor you. I was in a church some years ago, and one brother was causing a little flack by saying that whoever presided at the table had to break the bread, he had to give thanks. He had to do it himself personally because Jesus did it that way. Well, I informed him he's not Jesus. Well, we all knew that. I believe he did too. Acts 20 and verse 7, on the first day of the week, disciples came together to break bread. Each one breaks his own bread, and it has no bearing on the man who's standing here as to the acceptability of the eating of the bread, as to whether he breaks it or doesn't. Breaking has to do with consumption. Then we got the problem of Sunday night communion. And then there is the wedding and funeral in the church building. I read an article yesterday that a brother, I've known him for a long time, think a lot of him, but I believe he's wrong on this. He says he's opposed to a wedding in the church building. He says, where's the authority for it? Well, brethren, the church isn't doing it. If the church was doing it as a function of the church, then you need authority. That's about like asking, where's the authority to manicure your nails before service? I hope it's before service. Give me authority for combing your hair in the church building. You want to give it to me? Where's the authority for combing your hair or manicuring your nails? Where's the authority for somebody coming off of the street and using the telephone in a local call? Where's the authority for a man coming in and getting a drink of water out of the fountain? It's not a question of authority. It's a question of judgment on the part of whether the church or elders want some things to take place in the meeting house or not. Where's the authority for kids playing hopscotch on the parking lot? Somebody want to give me that? Not a question of authority. It's a question of judgment. Neighbor across the street might want to borrow the church's shovel. Here, the brothers out there in the shed or wherever it's being kept, and somebody next door, he comes over and says, see, could I borrow the shovel for just a moment? Says, no, I can't let you have it. This belongs to Jesus. Now, friend, that's a lunatic fringe position. It gets to be absurd after a while. I was down in southern West Virginia back in August and went to a funeral down there one day and had it in the church house. And I heard a fine gospel sermon, and they had some brethren who sang, and there was prayer. How in the world could we be opposed to preaching the gospel? Although it was a funeral, but here was individual action. Here was family action. They were just using the meeting house. That's a strange view in my way of thinking, my perception. Now, if I were somewhere, and I have been, where brethren didn't want a wedding in the meeting house, I don't cause any uproar over that. I would just acquiesce to it and they can have their wedding somewhere else. I'm not going to tear up the church to whether we have one or don't have one in the meeting house. But if we're having them, brethren, I think those who are opposed to it should be as kind to us as I was to them, don't you? Well, then there's what sign we're going to put out on the front of the meeting house. How are we going to paint Church of Christ? And brethren, get in a fuss over that. Are we going to put up Church of Christ on the meeting house? If we did, they might think the building is the Church of Christ. Well, they know better. Nobody, I don't believe, is I don't know whether I should say dumb or not. I put my name sometimes up on the mailbox out in front of the house. They know that the mailbox isn't Weldon Warnick. At least I hope they know it. They know that's where to put my mail. And when you see Church of Christ out on the front, they know that the church meets there. So some of them say, well, you got to put the Church of Christ assembles here. I've always wondered, don't want to be technical about it, how in the world they get up there. Do you ever think about that? Then the brethren said, y'all, you shouldn't put Church of Christ out on the front. Well, what are you going to put? Now, I'm not opposed to Church of God, but you put Church of God out there, that'd be misleading. The church is the Church of God. It's the Church of the Lord. It's the church. I got a letter from some woman not too long ago over in New York, and she wanted to know about some things. She said, we got a preacher here who doesn't believe in putting anything out on the front of the building. I think they were renting the building or whatever it was. And maybe she said didn't even believe in having an invitation song. We got those. Well, I think you need something out there to identify, locate. And brethren, why are we ashamed of the Church of Christ? That's what it is. That's not a proper name, but it's used in Romans 16:16. The churches of Christ salute you. It's a relationship, and the church belongs to Christ. And why be ashamed to use it? Well, then we got the problem of posture in prayer. Announcements before services began or at the close of social activities. And if we don't watch, brethren, concerning some of the things that we're proposing, we're going to have to cut some of the Bible out. Do you ever stop to read Paul's salutations in Romans 16 and other places, how personal they are? And he gets down to the close of his letter and he becomes personal. Salute this one, salute that one. We salute you. Well, can we read that? Can we do what Paul said at the close or beginning of a service? Just like Brother Dan got up here a while ago and talked about some things of an individual nature, or we sometimes make announcements that involve social activities. I've seen brethren who opposed announcing wedding showers, I should say. And that's strange to me. Can't announce a wedding shower. And some of the women, they'd have it all Xeroxed or mimeographed and cut up in little strips, and they'd slip around and hand every lady one that came in because you couldn't announce it before service began. That's strange, isn't it? Some brethren wouldn't even announce the birth of a baby. Announce the death of it, but announce the birth of it. Seemed to me like it should be more rejoicing in the birth of it and the death of it. Brethren, things that have to do with the good and welfare of individual Christians can be announced and ought to be announced before or after service, or at the close of the service. In Acts 2 and verse 46, the brethren at Jerusalem, the Bible says that they ate their meat or their food with gladness and singleness of heart from house to house. Somebody says you can't announce a picnic that individuals in the church are having, preacher. Can't announce that. Well, can I read Acts 2:46? Would it be all right to read? I just quoted it. You know, here Paul says this is what they did. Can we do what they did? Well, sure we can, not make it a church activity. Separate the eating from church function. But brethren, we can get together and eat and enjoy one another's company, and we ought to do that more. Get better acquainted with one another. Oh, we've gotten to me rather ridiculous on some things. You can't announce social activities that involve the good of the members coming together and enjoying one another's company. We need to separate them indeed. But announcement is something else. Well, I see right now I'm not going to be able to finish this up this morning. I'll take care of it tonight. But then we got also literature, what we're going to use. Some brethren say just use the Bible. Just use the Bible. Don't believe in that uninspired literature. But they got song books. You see how inconsistent we are, brethren? I remember I had a discussion here a few years ago, and some of you recall it. And here was a brother that divided churches all over northeastern Kentucky and some other places. He's a good preacher, but he's radical as can be, and I'd tell him that to his face. When it comes to the liberties that God has given us in the church, and the brethren had a tract in the rack, and it was a good tract written by a woman. And he went into a rave and a rant. When he learned that, he said, I didn't know it's back there. He said, it's a sin to have it back there, and you need to get rid of it. And they did, probably after we dismissed. Maybe somebody ran back and took it out before. I don't know. And how inconsistent they were. Because the same brethren were using a book, that Redback book that we used to have. That has 150 songs in it written by women. And to top it all off, we sang one that night written by a woman, Fanny Crosby, I believe. And I told the brethren, and I believe it so, if you're going to be consistent, you need to get your scissors and cut out every song in that book that was written by a woman. Brethren, we want to make women in the church mannequins. All they can do is just sit and watch the men function. The Lord's church is for everybody. And that doesn't mean that there's not guidelines or regulations. Indeed, there are. A woman can't be a preacher. A woman can't be an elder in the church or a deacon in the church. A woman can't have a class of men and teach them in the church. But I want to tell you, there's work for women to be done, and God's assigned her work and activity. And you read in this book about women prophetesses. You read in this book about the older women teaching the younger women. And we need to release all of this energy and let them serve and function for the glory of God Almighty. Now, we talked about a while ago in this diagram the liberal rope and the radical rope. And we've been besieged by radicalism and extremism. And it'll paralyze us, brethren, and we'll self-destruct unless we can extricate ourselves from this tightrope in which we've placed ourselves many times. And get back to going the middle of the road, neither to the left or to the right, walking in truth, using the expedience and options that God, by generic authority, has permitted us to use. And that's the way the work is to be done, and that's what brought the church to where it is. And I'll tell you, let me tell you something. All of the radical, hobbyistic churches across this country are minuscule churches, and they can meet in a cracker box. They're not growing churches. They're not thriving churches. And I don't want to leave the impression that the church of the Lord should just throw off all restraints in order to bring the numbers in. That is what I'm talking about. But something's wrong with the movement when it is negative in effect. It's adverse to growth. The New Testament church grew, and we can grow if we use the methods and the options that are available for us under generic authority as taught in the Bible. You know me well enough that I wouldn't tolerate one moment a compromise of truth or walking in that which is not permitted by the Scriptures. But at the same time, we need to use our liberties as the people of God in order to accomplish the work. Then another problem we have is drawing interest on the money. And some brethren tell us you can't draw interest on the money, preacher, and divided churches over it. Well, let me look at it this way. Can the church, brethren, receive money on anything, any way other than just what we give on Sunday morning? Now, I'm not talking about a fundraising approach. The only way we can raise money by the church is giving of our means individually on the Lord's Day, give to God. But can we receive money other ways than through just Sunday morning or Sunday evening, whatever it may be, contributions? Why, sure we can. Do. Let's just say a church has a preacher's house. And here's the preacher's house. And back under several years ago, it was built a really fancy house. I mean, it was a 4-bedroomer. And 2.5 baths. And a full basement. And for $30,000. Well, the church keeps it for about 20 years. And inflation goes up, you know. And they need to get rid of the house for some reason or other. What are they going to sell it for? Huh? What would you suggest they sell it for? Well, some brethren say you ought to sell it for $30,000. That's what you paid for it. Now, you think that's good stewardship? Are elders stewards of God? Titus 1, verse 7 says they are. Well, this on the market today is worth $75,000. That's what's appraised at. And Brother Terrell, he takes it and he puts it up for $75,000. And of course, there's been upkeep in this house, and all that won't be realized, but let's say there's quite a difference there, brethren, between $30,000 and $75,000. There's a profit, isn't there? Yes. But that's not been our motive, you see, our purpose to go into the real estate business. We're just using stewardship with what we got. And if you can own a house to start with, you can sell a house. If you can buy one, you can sell it. And you buy it at the going market, and you sell it at the going market, and there's some money that's realized in profit. Now, what should the money should be used for? The work of the church. That's what it should be used for. Did we get that by free will offerings? No, we got it by sale of property. And the same thing can be true with the meeting house. And there's a lot of money can be realized there. And I know of a church that some local contractor gave them 7 acres. He said to a friend of his who's a member of the church, said, I want to give you some property. Ah, he's a fine fellow. So he said, well, what's the catch? He said, there's no catch. I said, well, I want to talk to you about it. He went over and talked to him about it. He said, what's the purpose of giving us 7 acres? Well, he said, if I pay income tax, I've made a lot of money this year. If I pay income tax, I'm going to have to pay more than that property's worth. Or as much as that property's worth. He said, I'd rather give it to you, all 7 acres of it, and then I can deduct it lawfully, legally. And he did do it lawfully and legally. And so they got 7 acres. Well, they built a church building on it, built the preacher's house on it, had property left over. And this property, brethren, what's left over is going to bring close to $400,000. Now, they didn't get that by free will. They got it from an ailing center. Preacher, I don't believe an ailing center can give anything to the church. Oh, now watch it. If he can't, then we're going to have closed worship. And when we get ready for the collection, we want all you who are not members to leave. Because we don't want the treasury polluted. Now, we know that isn't the approach.
And a man who's not a member of the church, he might say, I want to give $1,000 to that congregation, and it's in the collection plate. What are you going to do with it? Well, you take it. Now, I want to tell you, there's a lot of difference, brethren, between doing it that way and going out here and soliciting an alien, a non-member, for $1,000, isn't there? And the church shouldn't be soliciting the world for money. And the church shouldn't be in the real estate business to make money. But it owns real estate to do what God said do. And stewardship, principles of stewardship, get in this picture. And stewardship would regulate these things right here. Whether you're a good steward or whether you're a bad one. Well, let me talk about one other thing. I mean, we got all these just some of them. I don't cover all of these quirk ideas that brethren have, but I want to show you, brethren, what can happen, and I'm going to quit. Now, I'll tell you what is happening among us, and it's depressing. And one is, here's a good church. It's going along, and it's thriving, and the people are being saved, and they're in harmony and loved, and then the devil gets into it. And when you got church trouble, the devil's in it. I'll guarantee you that. And so it's going along real good, and they're in harmony and peace, but then something goes awry. And so they divide. And so here's one over here that's got many containers. They divide over containers. And this other group, they were in harmony. And this group over here, they have one container. And so they're divided on the outs with one another. It's a despicable thing. They're talking about one another and undermining one another, whatever. Well, here they are, and then another problem comes along. And they get into it as to whether a brother can wear a beard or not, of all things. And both churches are affected by it, and so they split again. And so you hear, you have the beard church, and you have the no beard church. And they're affected the same way. And you got a beard church over here, and a no beard church. Now, that isn't right. No beard church. Now, how many churches you got? You got four. Now, you start out with one good one. You got four. But some other things come along, you see. And women teachers, they get into it. And they divide here over women teachers, you see. All right. Now, let's do a little more arithmetic here. And so here's women teachers. And they're into it. Now, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 churches. And that's what's happening, brethren. And there's no reason of it. That's what factionalism does. That's what opinionism will do. And when we impose our own opinions on brethren instead of preaching the gospel, the truth of God, we're going to have problems. Now, if they didn't want the women teachers, and they didn't make a law out of it, and that was just their judgment, although they shouldn't cut women off, I don't think, like that. But nevertheless, they say, we don't have women teachers, but we're not going to make it a law and a test of fellowship. We can get along. And they wanted one container, and here's a brethren with many containers, and they're not going to make it a test of fellowship, and they have tolerance, and they believe that we're walking in the light and in truth, and we have a relationship with one another. I don't have any problem with that. It's when they make a law and bind it, and then division comes. Well, you can just extend this right on out, and you instead of having 8, you have 16. Instead of 16, have 32, and there's no end to it. Let's go back to the passage. Then tonight I'll get into some other things and into some scriptures I want to share with you. But 1 Corinthians 11, verse 19, for there must be also heresies or factions among you, that they which are approved may be made manifest among you. There's going to be heresies. Men are not going to do right. They didn't at Corinth. There were some of Paul and some of Peter and some of Apollos and some of Christ. And these things happen, but it's a testing time. And men are not always going to do right. But if we're going to work in harmony and peace, we're going to have to allow, brethren, for some differences among us, different views on some things that don't compromise the truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ, but we need to keep those opinions to ourselves. And one of the great men in my lifetime was a brother over in West Virginia. And he was a wonderful man. He didn't believe in Sunday night communion. But you know, his attitude was, I'm not going to resist it. I'm not going to stir up the church over it. He wouldn't partake of it himself on Sunday night. But he didn't make an issue out of it, and he permitted the rest of us to. And that's the kind of attitude I'm talking about, and the kind we need in the church of God. If you're in the office this morning, you're an unsaved, not a Christian, as we sing this song, we want you to come and give God your heart. Will you come and be baptized into Christ? If you're an unfaithful child of God, will you come and be restored to your first love? Will you come? If you're a faithful Christian and you're not a member of a local church under elders, will you come this morning and join with us in the work that we're trying to do here? Will you come? While together we stand, while we sing.